Chapter 3. I never greatly envied anybody but the dead, he said, when he had looked at her. Always envy the dead. The coveted estate of silence, time's only absolute gift, it was the one benefaction he had ever considered worthwhile. Yet the years were not unkindly to Mark Twain. They brought him sorrow, but they brought him likewise the capacity and opportunity for large enjoyment, and at the last they laid upon him a kind of benediction. Naturally impatient, he grew always more gentle, more generous, more tractable and considerate as the seasons passed. His final days may be said to have been spent in the tranquil light of a summer afternoon. His own end followed by a few months, that of his daughter. There were already indications that his heart was seriously affected, and soon after John's death he sought the warm climate of Bermuda. But his malady made rapid progress, and in April he returned to Stormfield. He died there just a week later, April 21, 1910. Any attempt to designate Mark Twain's place in the world's literary history would be presumptuous now. Yet I cannot help thinking that he will maintain his supremacy in the century that produced him. I think so because, of all the writers of that 100 years, his work was the most human, his utterances went most surely to the mark. In the long analysis of the ages it is the truth that counts, and he never approximated, never compromised, but pronounced those absolute verities to which every human being, of whatever rank, must instantly respond. His understanding of subjective human nature, the vast, unwritten life within, was simply amazing. Such knowledge he acquired at the fountainhead, that is, from himself. He recognized in himself an extreme example of the human being with all the attributes of power and of weakness, and he made his exposition complete. The world will long miss Mark Twain. His example and his teaching will be neither ignored nor forgotten. Genius defies the laws of perspective, and looms larger as it recedes. The memory of Mark Twain remains to us a living and intimate presence that today, even more than in life, constitutes a stately moral bulwark reared against hypocrisy and superstition, a mighty national menace to sham. Mark Twain's letters, early letters, 1853. New York and Philadelphia, we have no record of Mark Twain's earliest letters. Very likely they were soiled pencil notes, written to some school sweetheart, to Ecky Thatcher, perhaps, and tossed across at lucky moments, or otherwise, with happier disastrous results. One of those smudgy, much-folded school notes of the Tom Sawyer period would be priceless today, and somewhere among forgotten keepsakes it may exist, but we shall not be likely to find it. No letter of his boyhood, no scrap of his earlier writing, has come to light except his penciled name, Sam Clemens, laboriously inscribed on the inside of a small worn purse that once held his meager, almost non-existent wealth. He became a printer's apprentice at 12, but as he received no salary, the need of a purse could not have been urgent. He must have carried it pretty steadily, however, from its appearance as a kind of symbol of hope, maybe a token of that seller's optimism which dominated his early life, and was never entirely subdued. No other writing of any kind has been preserved from Sam Clemens' boyhood, none from that period of his youth, when he had served his apprenticeship, and was a capable printer on his brother's paper, a contributor to it when occasion served. Letters and manuscripts of those days have vanished, even his contributions in printed form are unobtainable. It is not believed that a single number of Orion Clemens' paper, the Hannibal Journal, exists today. It was not until he was 17 years old that Sam Clemens wrote a letter any portion of which has survived. He was no longer in Hannibal. Orion's unprosperous enterprise did not satisfy him. His wish to earn money and to see the world had carried him first to St. Louis, where his sister Pamela was living, then to New York City, where a World's Fair in a Crystal Palace was in progress. The letter tells of a visit to this great exhibition. It is not complete, and the fragment bears no date, but it was written during the summer of 1853. Fragment of a letter from Sam 50. Clemens to his sister Pamela Moffat, in St. Louis, summer of 1853. Dot 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 from the gallery, second floor, you have a glorious sight, the flags of the different countries represented, the lofty dome, glittering jewelry, gaudy tapestry, and see, with the busy crowd passing to and fro, 'tis a perfect fairy palace, beautiful beyond description. The machinery department is on the main floor, but I cannot enumerate any of it on account of the lateness of the hour, past 8 o'clock. It would take more than a week to examine everything on exhibition, and as I was only in a little over 2 hours tonight, I only glanced at about one third of the articles, and having a poor memory, I have enumerated scarcely any of even the principal objects. The visitors to the palace average 6,000 daily, double the population of Hannibal. The price of admission being 50 cents, they take in about $3,000. The Latin observatory, height about 280 feet, is near the palace. From it, you can obtain a grand view of the city and the country round. The Croton Aqueduct, to supply the city with water, is the greatest wonder yet. Immense sewers are laid across the bed of the Hudson River, and pass through the country to Westchester County, where a whole river is turned from its course, and brought to New York. From the reservoir in the city to the Westchester County reservoir, the distance is 30-8 miles. And if necessary, they could supply every family in New York with 100 barrels of water per day. I am very sorry to learn that Henry has been sick. He ought to go to the country and take exercise, for he is not half so healthy as Ma thinks he is. If he had my walking to do, he would be another boy entirely. 4 times every day I walk a little over 1 mile, and working hard all day, and walking 4 miles, is exercise. I am used to it now, though, and it is no trouble. Where is it Orion's going to? Tell Ma my promises are faithfully kept, and if I have my health I will take her to Kentucky in the spring. I shall save money for this. Tell Jim and all the rest of them to write, and give me all the news. I am sorry to hear such bad news from Will and Captain Bowen. I shall write to Will soon. The Chatham-Square Post Office and the Broadway Office too, are out of my way, and I always go to the General Post Office. So you must write the direction of my letters plain, New York City, NY, without giving the street or anything of the kind, or they may go to some of the other offices. It has just struck 2 a.m. and I always get up at 6, and am at work at 7. You ask me where I spend my evenings. Where would you suppose, with a free printer's library containing more than 4,000 volumes within a quarter of a mile of me, and nobody at home to talk to? I shall write to Ella soon. Write soon, truly your brother Sam. P.S. I have written this by a light so dim that you nor Ma could not read by it. He was lodging in a mechanic's cheap boarding house in Doon Street, and we may imagine the bareness of his room, the feeble poverty of his lamp. Elma, my promises are faithfully kept. It was the day when he had left Hannibal. His mother, Jane Clemens, a resolute, wiry woman of 49, had put together his few belongings. Then, holding up a little testament, "Want you to take hold of the end of this, Sam," she said, "and make me a promise. I want you to repeat after me these words. I do solemnly swear that I will not throw a card or drink a drop of liquor while I am gone." Apostrophe, it was this oath, repeated after her, that he was keeping faithfully. The Will Bowen mentioned is a former playmate, one of Tom Sawyer's outlaw band. He had gone on the river to learn piloting with an elder brother, the captain. What the bad news was, is no longer remembered, but it could not have been very serious, for the Bowen boys remained on the river for many years. La was Samuel Clemens' cousin and one-time sweetheart, Ella Creel. M was Jim Wolfe, an apprentice in Orion's office, and the hero of an adventure which long after Mark Twain wrote under the title of Jim Wolfe and the Cats. There is scarcely a hint of the future Mark Twain in this early letter. It is the letter of a boy of 17 who is beginning to take himself rather seriously, who, finding himself for the first time far from home, and equal to his own responsibilities, is willing to carry the responsibility of others. Henry, his brother, 3 years younger, had been left in the printing office with Orion, who, after a long, profitless fight, is planning to remove from Hannibal. The young traveler is concerned as to the family outlook and will furnish advice if invited. He feels the approach of prosperity and will take his mother on a long coveted trip to her old home in the spring. His evenings? Where should he spend them, with a free library of 4,000 volumes close by? It is distinctly a youthful letter, a bit pretentious, and wanting in the spontaneity and humor of a later time. It invites comment now, chiefly because it is the first surviving document in the long human story. He was working in the printing office of John A. Gray and Green, on Cliff Street, and remained there through the summer. He must have written more than once during this period, but the next existing letter also to Sister Pamela was written in October. It is perhaps a shade more natural in tone than the earlier example, and there is a hint of Mark Twain in the first paragraph. To Mrs. Moffat, in St. Louis, New York. October Saturday 53. My dear sister, I have not written to any of the family for some time, from the fact, firstly, that I didn't know where they were, and secondly, because I have been fooling myself with the idea that I was going to leave New York every day for the last 2 weeks. I have taken a liking to the abominable place, and every time I get ready to leave, I put it off a day or so, from some unaccountable cause. It is as hard on my conscience to leave New York as it was easy to leave Hannibal. I think I shall get off Tuesday, though. Edwin Forrest has been playing, for the last 16 days, at the Broadway Theater, but I never went to see him till last night. The play was The Ladiator. I did not like parts of it much, but other portions were really splendid. In the latter part of the last act, where the gladiator, Forrest, dies at his brother's feet, in all the fierce pleasure of gratified revenge, the man's whole soul seems absorbed in the part he is playing, and it is really startling to see him. I am sorry I did not see him play Amon and Pythias, the former character being his greatest. He appears in Philadelphia on Monday night. I have not received a letter from home lately, but got a journal the other day, in which I see the office has been sold. I suppose Ma, Orion, and Henry are in St. Louis now. If Orion has no other project in his head, he ought to take the contract for getting out some weekly paper, if he cannot get a foremanship. Now, for such a paper as the Presbyterian, containing about 60,000 ems, type measurement. He could get $20 or $25 per week, and he and Henry could easily do the work. Nothing to do but set the type and make up the forms. If my letters do not come often, you need not bother yourself about me, for if you have a brother nearly 18 years of age, who is not able to take care of himself a few miles from home, such a brother is not worth one's thoughts. And if I don't manage to take care of number one, be assured you will never know it. I am not afraid, however. I shall ask favors from no one, and endeavor to be and shall be as independent as a wood sawyer's clerk. I never saw such a place for military companies as New York. Go on the street when you will, you are sure to meet a company in full uniform, with all the usual appendages of drums, fifes, and see, I saw a large company of soldiers of 1812 the other day, with a 76 veteran scattered here and there in the ranks. And as I passed through one of the parks lately, I came upon a company of boys on parade. Their uniforms were neat, and their muskets about half the common size. Some of them were not more than 7 or 8 years of age, but had evidently been well drilled. passage to Albany 160 miles on the finest steamers that ply the Hudson is now 25 cents cheap enough, but is generally cheaper than that in the summer. I want you to write as soon as I tell you where to direct your letter. I would let you know now if I knew myself. I may perhaps be here a week longer, but I cannot tell. When you write, tell me the whereabouts of the family. My love to Mr. Moffat and Ella. Tell Ella I intend to write to her soon, whether she wants me to or not. Truly your brother, SAML 50. Clemens. He was in Philadelphia when he wrote the next letter that has come down to us, and apparently satisfied with the change. It is a letter to Orion Clemens, who had disposed of his paper, but evidently was still in Hannibal. An extended description of a trip to Fairmount Park is omitted because of its length, its chief interest being the tendency it shows to descriptive writing the field in which he would make his first great fame. There is, however, no hint of humor, and only a mild suggestion of the author of The Innocents Abroad in this early attempt. The letter as here given is otherwise complete, the omissions being indicated. To Orion Clemens, in Hannibal. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, October 26, 1853. My dear brother, it was at least 2 weeks before I left New York that I received my last letter from home. And since then, not a word have I heard from any of you. And now, since I think of it, it wasn't a letter either, but the last number of the Daily Journal, saying that that paper was sold, and I very naturally supposed from that, that the family had disbanded, and taken up winter quarters in St. Louis. Therefore, I have been writing to Pamela, till I've tired of it, and have received no answer. I have been writing for the last 2 or 3 weeks. To send Ma some money, but devil take me, if I knew where she was, and so the money has slipped out of my pocket somehow or other, but I have a dollar left, and a good deal owing to me, which will be paid next Monday. I shall enclose the dollar in this letter, and you can hand it to her. I know it's a small amount, but then it will buy her a handkerchief, and at the same time, serve as a specimen of the kind of stuff we are paid with in Philadelphia. For you see it's against the law, in Pennsylvania, to keep or pass a bill of less denomination than $5. I have only seen 2 or 3 bank bills, since I have been in the state. On Monday the hands are paid off in sparkling gold, fresh from the mint, so your dreams are not troubled with the fear of having doubtful money in your pocket. I am subbing at the Inquirer office. One man has engaged me to work for him every Sunday till the 1st of next April, when I shall return home, to take Ma to Kentucky. And another has engaged my services for the 24th of next month, and if I want it, I can get subbing every night of the week. I go to work at 7 o'clock in the evening, and work till 3 o'clock the next morning. I can go to the theater and stay till 12 o'clock, and then go to the office, and get work from that till 3 the next morning, when I go to bed, and sleep till 11 o'clock, then get up and loaf the rest of the day. The type is mostly agate and minion, with some bourgeois, and when one gets a good agate take, gate, minion, etc., sizes of type, take, a piece of work. Type measurement is by M's, meaning the width of the letter M. He is sure to make money. I made $2.50 last Sunday, and was laughed at by all the hands, the poorest of whom sets 11,000 on Sunday, and if I don't set 10,000, at least, next Sunday, I'll... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.